Charleston Police Chief Gregory Mullen called the massacre a hate crime.
We are looking for a white male, approximately 21 years old, sandy blonde hair, and he obviously is extremely dangerous. And what we are asking that if anyone in the community has information about this particular individual, that he contact law enforcement immediately.
Do you believe this was a hate crime?
I do believe this was a hate crime.
The known victims include the church's pastor, the Reverend Clementa Pinckney, and it's believed his sister. Reverend Pinckney also served as a state senator. Just hours earlier, he'd campaigned with Democratic hopeful Hillary Clinton in Charleston. After meeting with the victims' families, Charleston Mayor Joseph Riley described a heartbreaking scene.
As Chief Mullen said, our city police department, county police department.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fusebox Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com. You're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right, peace.
I wasn't planning to do a show today, but the shooting at the AME church in Charleston, South Carolina has, what can I say? AME is my family's church. Everyone who listens to this show knows that I'm Gullah Geechee, that is my nation. That is the nation that I will claim. And those are my people. So for the fact that this particular church was attacked on this particular week, when we talk about Denmark, D.C., when we talk about Gullah Jack, and we talk about the revolt that would have happened had it not been for certain house slaves that really were trying to hold on to their own privilege and was simply afraid. You know, there's a lot of history about what's going on right now, and we know who this man is, and he is a grown man. They're referring to him as a boy in the press. Dylan, you know, it's just Dylan Roof. I mean, it's just hard to even, you know, mention his name. We're already hearing excuses about his mental state, even though it seems that he's an avowed white supremacist. He was wearing flags from the former white ruled state of Rhodesia, which doesn't exist anymore, is now Zimbabwe. The flag of the apartheid state of the Republic of South Africa. What else is there to say? He has a history of making statements like this. He made it very clear that, you know, he wanted to end what he considers to be the creeping influence of black people in the United States. He feels that black men are taking all of the white women, right? We've heard this before. There was a shooter in Washington, D.C. a few years back who said that all the brothers get the hoes, and he shot up a dance class full of women, and then he shot himself. You know, we have the sexual connotations of this, right? They come all the way back to the plantation. We have him talking about that, you know, they're taking things, they're taking the country, and that we have to go. And he sat for at least an hour through the service next to the man that he later assassinated, who turns also out to be a state senator. Oakland-based community activist Violent Fanon. You can find him at Violent Fanon at Twitter. He's a graduate student of UC Berkeley. And he is involved in anti-police brutality work and Gaza solidarity work. And really, I'm trying not to be emotional about this because, like I said, I am Gullah Geechee, and the AME is my family church. So we're going to try to move on. And Violin Fanon, thank you for being on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Well, thanks for having me under these circumstances.
Yeah. So, you know, your take on this. You made a comment as we were warming up for this that when you went to work today, there was a certain level of apathy that really struck you.
Yeah, first of all, you know, I'm a white American Jew, so that's sort of where I come to understand what's going on from. And most of my coworkers are also white, or you know, at least non-black, and everything I've heard, you know, people are obviously following the news. They know what's going on, but everything is sort of framed the same way Obama was framing it this morning, as like a gun control issue. You know, I mean, even though this killer is like has openly said that he did this, you know, because he wanted to attack black people, it's just not being framed as a racial issue anywhere except for, you know, the radical corners of Twitter that you and I occupy.
I wasn't really surprised that Lindsey Graham and Rick Santorum would make this out to be a anti-Christian issue. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't surprised that the NRA and the other gun rights groups, Open Carry and what have you across the country, that they were going to try to make this an anti-gun plot or ploy. I fully expect Alex Jones to say that Dylann Roof was a mind control subject of some secret government plot.
I believe he's going after antidepressants is his line on this. If I read correctly, mm-hmm. he's putting this on antidepressants. I guess antidepressants make you an avowed racist is his line of logic there.
Yeah, it's going to be something. If it's not one thing, it's going to be something else.
Yeah. And, I've even heard people saying that this was a false flag to distract attention from the TPP fast track passing this morning. Mm-hmm. Anything to make this out to be anything other than what it was, which was a white supremacist murdering black church going members.
You know, ethnically speaking, as a Jew in the United States that recognizes the human rights of the indigenous Palestinians, recognizes your own history as a Jew and, mm-hmm. and what that means and what that has meant, really, you know, in terms of the rest of the world, when Europe and the rest of the Christian world sat and watched what was happening in the mid-20th century. When you see the attacks, every 28 hours is now every 21 hours an African person is killed by a law enforcement officer in the United States or a vigilante like George Zimmerman and now Dylann Roof. What goes through your mind? You know, when you think about this in terms of the humanity and the lack of respect for humanity and the fact that after World War II, it seems that we've learned absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's our culture is just sick. White culture is just sick. I mean, you know, going back to my own experiences with my Jew, you know, being raised as a Jew, you know, I feel like there are sort of, no matter who you are, if you're raised Jewish, you are raised steeped in the memory of the Holocaust. I mean, that is just, you know, everything you are told about growing up is in relation to the Holocaust. And I feel like there are sort of two paths that Jews take in response to that. One is sort of a reactionary, you know, we can't ever let this happen again. We must, you know, be, you know, totalitarian fascists and use violence to prevent any repetition of the Holocaust, which, as we can see now, just serves to perpetuate violence and genocide. And the other path, which is the path that I, you know, luckily went down, is to see, you know, sort of what intolerance breeds. And to realize that we need to do everything we can to oppose that and to avoid it. And so for me, that's brought me to issues surrounding police brutality, gentrification, economic issues in this country faced by oppressed peoples. And then also what's going on in Israel in relation to the Palestinians. I mean, you know, as an American Jew, as a white American Jew, I am complicit in all of this violence, both with my, you know, money and you know, and my you know, my cultural identity.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, looking at the scandal that is taking place right now at the same time with Rachel Dolezal and her seeming, you know, like 10-year jump from one identity to another, her morphing, I really should say, from one identity to another. She didn't change her name. She didn't change, you know, where she was born, but she built a legend behind this and went from being white and you know, privileged to, you know, arguing against that privilege. You know, when you say that you're responsible, you know, what exactly do you mean by that? Because as an individual, you know, you are not responsible for acts, but you do come from a group that is using its own ethnicity and its own history with bias and with genocide as a justification for really enacting another genocide someplace else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I am complicit in the sense that I benefit from this system, and to the extent that I don't, you know, willfully give up all of my privilege to the benefit of oppressed peoples, I continue to be complicit. And you know, obviously, I try my best to work hard to try to fix that, but obviously there's no way I can really do that. You know, I can only do my best, and it's hard. I mean, as far as like the Rachel Dolezal thing, I mean, I heard some really smart points on Twitter yesterday, and I'm sorry I can't remember the name of the woman who was making these points, but you know, she pointed out that, I mean, as white Americans, we really have no culture. You know, our culture is capitalism. You know, our culture is genocide. And that leaves us sort of cultureless. And so you can sort of see, obviously it doesn't excuse, but you can sort of see, how someone like Rachel Dolezal could get so lost. Because, I mean, what culture does she have, of her own? And, you know, and that's intentional. I mean, culture is, you know, the survival tools of a group. And I mean, for white people, the way that we survive is white supremacy. I mean, that's our culture. That's our, I don't really know a better way to explain it. But so, you know, it's hard to live without culture, and to even know what that means. You know, I mean, I even could be accused of appropriation using the name of Frantz Fanon as my Twitter profile. But at the same time, I don't know of a white cultural writer who I have that sort of respect for, as I do Fanon.
I'm going to tell you, you know, there are going to be some African people who are going to, you know, they're going to have some questions when they hear this. And frankly, I didn't expect, you know, a white person with that, but you know, at the same time, you know, having heard what you've said, you know, it's something I can take into account and I can think about. Before we take a break here, let me ask you briefly, in the city of Oakland, what has been the attitude in terms of a community response to white supremacy? Oakland is not immune to white supremacist groups trying to organize, trying to get, you know, white people who live in the area, try to remind them of the Black Panther Party history in the region, to try to impress upon them that it's to their benefit to look out for white rights because they're surrounded by blackness. Have you heard, have you seen anything like this? And what would your analysis be of that sort of attempt?
You know, I mean, I haven't seen it as much from community members, although I'm sure that's just confirmation bias. But I definitely see that emanating from, you know, policies of the government of Oakland. Our mayor, for instance, has been absolutely awful when it comes to issues concerning black and brown residents of Oakland. And she doesn't seem, it doesn't seem like there's any chance of a turnaround in that respect. And that's been the reality in Oakland and in California. I mean, everyone, you know, talks about, the fantastic, gun law, you know, quote unquote, fantastic gun laws we have here in California. The only reason that we have those gun laws is as a reaction to Black Panthers, carrying weapons in self-defense in Oakland, to protect their communities against, you know, what happened yesterday, for instance. You know, so, you know, that's what always worries me in this dialogue about gun control as well is, I mean, when have gun laws ever been used to actually go after white people? I can't think of a time.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I mean, the last gun grab that I remember being reported, at least in the mainstream media, where it was acknowledged was when Blackwater went throughout Louisiana during the Katrina crisis and basically stripped arms from black residents.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Democracy Now, which is produced by Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, they reported film footage that was sent to them and played it on the show of white people who had admitted they were drinking beer and admitting to basically murdering black people the night before.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody actually believes this to be true, but if you remember that American sniper Chris Kyle claimed to have murdered something like 30 black people during Katrina, just matter-of-factly, no one actually believes that was true, but I mean, yeah.
The fact that he would even go so far as to, you know, add that to the legend on top of the other stories that we know about him that he's told that weren't true. Yeah, there's a lot to say. And we're going to be back with Violent Fanon in just a bit. We're going to take a short break. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
This is Radio Intelligente Rindigena.
Let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginal.
This is FSNL reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
Roseanne Cash for the American Association of Diabetes Educators.
Johnny Cash was my dad. For years he had diabetes but ignored it, even as his vision and health slipped away. Diabetes is serious. It can steal your sight, your limbs, even take you away from the people who love you. But it doesn't have to be this way. If you have diabetes, test and control your blood sugar regularly. You'll be healthier and you'll feel better too. To learn more, visit healthywithdiabetes.org.
दोपहर को कहाँ गई थी?
दोपहर को बाजार गई थी।
बता के नहीं जा सकती थी। अरे अभी इसने क्या बताना?
पड़ोसियों से पता चलता है मुझे।
पता चले तो क्या हुआ?
चुप। ये घर मैं चलाता हूँ। मुझसे पूछे बगैर कोई काम नहीं होगा इस घर में। चल समझ।
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेकथ्रू की पहल।
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice. End HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination. Get information from your community health center or nursing station, or visit www.caan.ca.
Let's talk though about what the quote lamestream media is saying about this. Ron Fournier, who's been on the show many times, from the National Journal, was on Fox News Sunday, Congressman Brooks, saying this.
The fastest growing voting bloc in this country thinks the Republican Party hates them. This party, your party, cannot be the party of the future beyond November if you're seen as a party of white people.
Your reaction?
Well, this is a part of the war on whites that's being launched by the Democratic Party. And the way in which they're launching this war is by claiming that whites hate everybody else. It's a part of the strategy that Barack Obama implemented in 2008, continued in 2012, where he divides us all on race, on sex, greed, envy, class warfare, all those kinds of things. Well, that's not true, okay? And if you look at the polling data, every demographic group in America agrees with the rule of law, enforcing and securing our borders, and every one of them understands that illegal immigration hurts every single demographic group. It doesn't make any difference if you're a white American, a black American, a Hispanic American, an Asian American, or if you're a woman or a man. Every single demographic group is hurt by falling wages and lost jobs. And so the Democrats, they have to demagogue on this and try to turn it into a racial issue, which is an emotional issue rather than a thoughtful issue. If it becomes a thoughtful issue, then we win and we win big, and they lose big, and they understand that. And as they get more desperate, where they're going to argue race and things like that to a much heightened emotional state. And I'll give you an example. If the law had been enforced 2 years ago on immigration, we would not have this surge today. So the president's decision to not obey the law, to not deport people who came here unlawfully 2 years ago, is what sent the message out across the globe that if you come into America, break our laws, this president will give you amnesty. So as a consequence, the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, Tom Marino, Ruckus over the weekend, Raul Labrador gave a great speech on Friday night talking about the Democrats having causes. They are the ones with their policies that are causing these illegal alien children to risk their lives and to die coming to America, to be subject to all kinds of physical and sexual abuse. The Democrats are solely responsible because it's their policies that are telling these kids, we'll reward you if you come.
I don't think Raul Labrador would probably say there's a war on whites, though, Congressman, don't you? That's a little, that characterization's a little out there.
But that doesn't affect what they're doing, though. And that's the political game that they're playing. Okay,
no, They're playing the race card, just like they played the war on women card. And you know, this is what the left does. But I just think that phraseology might not be the best choice. Luis Gutierrez was out there, and this kind of dovetails into what we're talking about. He spoke both in English and Spanish, and talk about whipping up his base. Let's listen.
Unfortunately, the way they speak about a community, it's almost as though the children, we are a vile, repugnant community to them, that they vilify and demonize in every one of their statements. And I think that that is a sad commentary.
Your reaction to your colleague?
Well, we've got a gentleman by the name of Alvin Holmes in Alabama that likes to holler racism every chance he gets. He's in the state legislature and been there as a fixture for over 3 decades, and Luis Gutierrez is the same thing. Okay, he doesn't live or work by thinking about what's in the best interest of America. He instead wants to divide us by race, and this is just a part of what he does. Again, the facts are clear. Deportation, securing our borders, helps every American of every national origin and every sex, well, both of them, Well, no, nowadays there might be more than
yeah.
two.
Yeah, don't limit yourself.
Well,
just
two.
Yeah, well, just don't limit yourself. Come on, you're being ridiculous. Hey, Congressman, we really appreciate your joining us. And
certainly.
The Alabama delegation has led on this issue of sovereignty and borders and wages across the board. And look, I'm going to be down in Alabama in, I guess, about a month and a half for, I think, the Alabama-Texas A&M game. So I'm going to be there. I can't wait to get back to Alabama. Congressman, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
All right, we'll take a break. Close it out on the Laura Ingraham Show. A lot more to get to. Should Ebola patients be coming to the United States for treatment? Your reaction.
Quit your bitching, nigger, and just let things be. You're messing up big time. Take it from me. Quit your bitching, nigger, or you'll get your due. All the Ku Klux Klan will come a-calling on you. For 40-something years, you've been raising all hell. And niggers, that ain't enough. We're all getting mighty fed up with you and all of your civil rights stuff. Don't you love this country? Either you do or you don't. If you ain't happy, then what the hell do you want? Hey, quit your bitching, niggers, and just let things be. You're messing up big time, take it from me. Quit your bitching, nigger, or you'll get your due. Cause the Ku Klux Klan will come a-calling on you. You got money and jobs and your equal rights given by the government. You got welfare, food stamps, a medical card, and sometimes a little free rent. You just keep begging, taking everything we've got. Well, damn you, nigger, don't you think it's time to stop? So quit your bitching, niggers, and just let things be. You're messing up big time, take it from me. Quit your bitchin', nigger, or you'll get your due. Cause the Ku Klux Klan will come a-callin' on you. Lately you're yelling down our rebel flag, wanting us to take it down. It represents our history and southern pride and rebel blood on the ground. So go to hell, nigger, I'm telling you loud and clear. It ain't coming down, the rebel flag is staying right here. Quit your bitchin', niggers, and just let things be. You're messing up big time, take it from me. Quit your bitchin', nigger, or you'll get your due. Cause the Ku Klux Klan will come a-callin' on you. Cause the Ku Klux Klan will come a-callin' on you.
That which is necessary to add on to my site, my family. Now, far being black power, or anti-white, or pro-black, outside white, we don't go along with that for a different reason. But I am black power, because black is that nucleus within the original man. Black is that sun in the universe, and that sun in the universe is that which gives me the power to be who I am. And everything that exists within that sun on the universe above exists within myself, and that's what I teach back to my beings. We are all. And you can't spell law without spelling all. All that exists within us. Peace.
Society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people and blowing up buildings.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
All right, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. Okay, so we're still speaking about the AME shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. We were speaking with activist Violent Fanon, who you can find on Twitter at Violent Fanon. And what we're trying to suss out now is basically we pretty much, you know, can see what happened. But what we're trying to suss out is what's going to happen next. So, you know, Violent Fanon, you know, now that this has been, you know, pretty much, you know, he's in custody now. He was taken in alive. There's no bruises on him. There's no scratches. Mm-hmm. He wasn't shot. He wasn't tasered. Mm-hmm. You know, he's intact, and he'll be able to tell his side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, what runs through your mind as an anti-police brutality activist when you see how he was taken into custody? We had a white supremacist, Ryan Giroux, who just murdered somebody not too long ago. He was taken into custody alive. What is it with this particular dichotomy that white America, white mainstream America, just simply doesn't want to understand?
It speaks for itself that before this man was arrested, everybody was predicted he would be arrested unharmed. So I think that sort of right there sort of shows that everybody's aware of this dichotomy. The thing that I, you know, found most interesting is this whole dialogue surrounding, you know, terrorism. Like, was this terrorism? And to me, like, it almost was bothering me a little bit, the rush to label him a terrorist. Not because he isn't a terrorist, he obviously is, but it almost sets up a false equivalency with, you know, what as Americans we're conditioned to think of as terrorism. You know, so you have like popular resistance movements, like Hamas, for instance. You know, they'll, you know, it's resistance of an oppressed people against an oppressor. And yes, it's political violence, but you've got to keep in mind the directionality of that power dynamic. What you have here in this case is you have a guy using political violence that's backed up by institutional power. And to me, that is like that is real terrorism, to the point where, you know, the Tsarnaev brothers and their scariest pressure cooker don't really instill that kind of fear in me as the fear that I would have of political violence backed up by institutional power. So, you know, you have the situation in Boston and with the Tsarnaev brothers where they shut down the city. And the media were on top of it 24/7, you know, going into every little detail of these of the Tsarnaev brothers' lives and everything. And then you contrast that with last night, where hours after the shooting took place, the major news networks were playing clips of Donald Trump. That is really scary. Like, that is terrorism when you have political violence backed up by institutional power. And I don't really see that distinction being discussed enough when we talk about what happened yesterday. This is so much worse than what we normally discuss of as terrorism in America.
Again, and I'm not trying to harp on this, but, you know, it's the fact that you are a Jew and that you are cognizant of these issues. And, you know, when you think about racial terrorism in the United States, and, you know, those who are not trying to run away from the truth will think about the Klan, they'll think about the white patriot parties, they'll think about the John Birch Society in the South, the Conservative Citizens Councils.
Yeah, but, white culture.
Yeah, white culture. But, you know, was it Leo Frank? He was not the only Jew that was killed by the Klan in the South.
No.
And, you know, there's a history here that, you know, I would like you to talk about just for a moment. Because there are many people who are supportive of Israel. I mean, Israel can do absolutely no wrong. They do not recognize the Nakba. They do not recognize the Shabin Shatila massacre. They recognize no Palestinian rights whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, because I've had these conversations, you know, that they will look at a situation like the AME shooting as, well, you know, it's just one of these problems. It's an American thing. And if black people didn't stop having, you know, black only churches, then this wouldn't have happened. You know, despite the fact that this man was part of the service and was welcomed into the church, you know, the sort of hate that many American Zionists, and Zionists in the UK, I should say, in the Anglophone world, exhibit the sort of racism that they exhibit in North America and in the UK and in Australia. Why is it that they cannot see that the same people who are coming after us have traditionally also come after them?
Again, it's the closest thing I can come to describing it is a twisted sort of post-traumatic stress disorder stemming from being just steeped in this memory of the Holocaust. And again, it can lead certain people to be incredibly reactionary. It's leading American Zionists, you know, and Zionists in Israel to ally with, you know, far right wing Christian evangelical groups that want all Jews in Israel so that Jesus can come back and send them all to hell. White supremacists who are like, yeah, they should have their country over here and we'll have our country over here. It's shared values.
Anders Breivik.
Yeah.
Considering himself to be a pro-Israeli, pro-Zionist, white supremacist, who was part of the active far right in Europe. He named all of the groups that he was involved with. Mm-hmm. Interpol knew exactly who he was involved with. He was also connected to Pam Geller and Robert Spencer.
Yeah.
Right?
David Horowitz. No, please.
How does this, relate, and how can American Jews say to themselves that we can be okay with the Rick Santorums and the Mike Huckabees and the Ted Nugents, knowing full well that eventually they're going to turn their negative attention against us, eventually?
I can't answer that question, which is why I'm an anti-Zionist. I can say that when I was growing, even though I was raised fairly liberal, and was raised more to think of the Holocaust in terms of we need to avoid intolerance rather than we need to, protect ourselves with violence. But at the same time, I was raised nominally Zionist, to the point where I'm pretty sure even my parents, the most they ever thought about it was, well, of course the Jews need a place to live. Not really thinking about what the actual mechanics of making that happen would involve. So I think for a lot of American Jews who are still Zionist, it's really out of just sheer ignorance of what's going on. And then as far as, how someone could know what's going on and still support the occupation and siege of Palestinian lands, I can't understand that. And I hope to never understand that.
Yeah, I think it's a real question. And these incidents, but how this can continue to perpetuate, because we're both, dealing with the same sort of animosities that have been going on for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see Zionists who should really know better side with someone like Dylann Roof, side with someone like Anders Breivik, that there was an article I read called Dancing the Horror Around the Region Blood that I thought was terrible. How it was just laying out the animosity that was coming across social media in terms of the support that many Israelis and many American Zionists were giving to Anders Breivik. I just didn't know, it's like, how do you process that when you look at how many people that this individual killed?
Yeah. The cognitive dissonance, is something I can understand, from studying neurobiology. just the way our brains are constructed, it is possible to hold two very opposing thoughts in your head at once. But beyond that, I can't understand it.
I think about it like John Robb. Here he was, a card-carrying Nazi, but he happened to be in Nanjing doing the genocide. the rape of Nanjing, and he wrote to Hitler and the SS, begging them for help, because for some reason he wasn't able to see the humanity of Jews in his own country, but he was able to see the humanity of the Chinese, who he obviously had an affinity for, as they were being massacred and being chopped up exactly the same way by the Japanese, who, like the Germans, you know, for a long time, denied. Well, actually, no. The Germans at least admit to what happened. The Japanese still deny to this day what was done in Nanjing, what was done in the Philippines. And which leads me to another question. The question of denial. As we're going out here, as a final question, Violent Phenomenon.
Sure.
How would you, and not so much analyze, because we've been doing that, but, you know, what would be your final recommendation to those white people who are still, as Martin Luther King said, are sick white brothers who, for whatever reason, will not listen to reason, and all they understand is the anger that they feel and the fear of the unknown that they feel coursing through their veins?
You know, I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, I know what I see my role as, and that's, you know, I try to, both obviously on Twitter, but also, I mean, at work today, for instance, I try to just educate people about what's going on. I mean, I'm constantly getting into shouting matches with, you know, either my family or friends or coworkers about these issues, and that's important. I mean, you know, people can't be afraid of being uncomfortable. The most I can do the least I can do is be uncomfortable when people are getting murdered. And so, you know, it's the job of white folks like myself to take it on themselves, to be uncomfortable, and to make others uncomfortable. And then, you know, as far as once you're educated what you can do, I mean, I honestly, groups like the Anti-Police Terror Project, that I work with in Oakland, I see as being the best response to things like this. And obviously in the name it's anti-police terror, but obviously the group works to basically dismantle white supremacy in all of its forms. And you know, the way that the group operates is basically by providing sort of like alternative structures to the ones that are failing us so horribly. So, for instance, we do people's investigations of police shootings. And, you know, if we were in South Carolina, I imagine we would be doing a people's investigation of this atrocity as well. Not allowing the structures that have, you know, failed communities time and time again, to do that work. You know, people have to come together and realize that, you know, the state will not do it for you. The corporations will not do it for you. I mean, we just need to organize as communities at the grassroots level. And it needs to be led by people who are most materially affected by that oppression. And that's incredibly key. You know, every group I work with in the Bay Area is explicitly led by the communities that are most affected by the oppression they oppose, whether that be Arab-led, like AROC, with some of the Palestinian solidarity activism I do, or, you know, Black and Brown-led, like with the Anti-Police Terror Project. And, you know, a really good example I can list for why it's so important that these groups be led by the communities most affected is, I mean, if you look back in history, the white man's burden, you know, slavery was seen as something to, you know, to help black folks, which is so ridiculous. I mean, if people who had actually stopped to ask black folks if they wanted to be enslaved, I doubt that would have been seen as an appropriate intervention. But, you know, white folks taking it upon themselves to quote-unquote help led to one of the worst genocides we've ever seen. You know, so if a group is doing work and it's not following the lead of those oppressed, I mean, that's really getting into white man's burden territory.
Yeah, and I think you pretty much nailed it. Everybody, Violent Fanon, please check out what he has to say at Violent Fanon on Twitter. He is an Oakland-based community activist, a Gaza supporter, and a graduate student of UC Berkeley. And, you know, we can only hope that there are other people out there like him who are continuing to do this work and are willing to take up that challenge of being uncomfortable. You know, thank you for being on, man. I really, really appreciate what you have to say, and I know my listeners will.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. And, you know, I want to make it clear that, you know, I don't have all the answers. I'm just here learning like everybody else, trying to do my best. And I hope everyone else will do the same.
All right. I hope so. Okay, everyone. That's been Violent Fanon. Please check him out at Violent Fanon on Twitter. This is the Angry Indian. You've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
Question is, Adrian from Florida said, what do you mean by white culture?
I don't know.
You said he had a deep-seated hatred for the white culture. What is that? What is the white culture?
You know, gosh, I'm so tempted to help make news here today.
Well, a Twitter question is, Adrian from Florida said, what do you mean by white culture?
I don't know.
You said he had a deep-seated hatred for the white culture. What is that? What is the white culture?
You know, gosh, I'm so tempted to help make news here today.
Well, no, I'm just curious. This was actually Adrian from Florida.
What to do? Adrian, go to glenbeck.com, listen to it. You can hear all of it.
No, but you didn't really address white culture, I think, in your explanation about President Obama. I haven't seen the whole show, but can you just, for our purposes...
Just for your purposes?
Yeah.
This will be a little secret between us?
No, for this show, can you explain what you mean by the white culture? Because some people might say, that sounds kind of racist.
Really? It's amazing to me that, for the first time, I think, in history... Somebody can ask a question and say, don't you think that maybe we have several pieces here? We have several pieces. George Bush says, my grandmother was a typical African-American that had her views bred into her. You don't think maybe we would ask questions about that comment? How is it that the first time, I think in history, you should check on it, somebody says, hey, there's some red flags here maybe we should look at, has become the target. How am I the target for asking questions?
People just want to know, what is white culture?
I'm gonna see if I can play your game. People just want to know.
You know, well, Adrian wants to know.
That's good for Adrian.
No, but I mean, it's fine. If you make a statement, though, shouldn't you be able to defend exactly what you mean by it?
Katie, how many times have you said something where you're like, I didn't think, what's a white culture? I don't know, what's a white culture? What? What is the white culture? I don't know how to answer that. That's not a trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not trying to trap you. I think people wanted to know what that meant exactly.
Well, we know Adrian does.
Yeah, and you're not going to answer her?
I'm not going to get into your soundbite gotcha game, which we already are.
We're actually, this is completely unedited. So if you felt like you wanted to explain it, you have all the time in the world.
Mm-hmm.
No? Don't want to go there? But basically, you stand behind your assertion that, in your view, President Obama is a racist.
I believe that Americans should ask themselves tough questions. Americans should turn over all the rocks and make their own decisions.
This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
My name is Nicholas Soames. I'm the Member of Parliament for Mid-Sussex, and I am the grandson of Winston Churchill. I've decided to lend my strongest possible support to this campaign because I am appalled by the dishonesty and the disgraceful way in which the British National Party have used Churchill's name, particularly during the European election, where they used his face, his features, his words, as promotional literature, trying to pretend that Churchill would have admired and supported the aims of the British National Party. What they have done is not only dishonest and irresponsible, but it's downright misleading to try and pretend that Churchill would have had any sympathy with the British National Party, whatever. He would, I can assure you, have loathed everything that they stand for. Churchill led a national government. He was acutely conscious, as Britain's war leader, of the need to have a national government, to bring all parties together. And yet what the BNP seek to do is to divide all parties, to bring division and upset and lack of coherence to our communities by driving wedges between people. That is the exact opposite of everything that Churchill wanted to do in the national government. This is a peaceful country, and what they bring for it is uncertainty, fear, and confusion. There is absolutely nothing that is British about the BNP.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Peace. This is Kamal Amani, aka Kamal Supreme. I'm in Brooklyn, Brooklyn, Medina, with my man Jonathan, his daughter Jasmine, my cousin Will, my wife Diane, my baby Hassan, and we are NewBlackMusic.net. And the name of this poem I'm about to do is called The N-Word. historically, we're forgetting where we came from and what the black man and woman do in America transmits all over the world and possibly the universe. But people are getting the wrong interpretation of our culture, history, and words such as the N-word. So they're using it lightly. Now, if we're going to use it, I don't think it should be as a term of endearment. Maybe dramatically, like I'm doing in performance poetry, you know, or maybe in a drama to show forth our history and bring forth meaning. But it shouldn't be something that anybody can toss off their lips, because we can't call Jews certain names because we'll be anti-Semitic, and we can't call Hispanics certain names because we'll be anti-them. So we can't call white people certain names. So why should we allow people to call us nigger? Why should we call ourselves nigger as a term of endearment? You know, I read articles that there's a store in Africa called Nigger, and they say they got that from Puff, and they think there's nothing wrong with nigger. They just was listening to his hip-hop, and that nigger's a good thing over there, you know? And, you know, I got white boys calling each other nigger, calling black people nigger, Spanish calling black nigger. Gotta stop. Gotta stop. Everybody got to get back into the history, for real. We're glorious people, but we're forgetting our history. We're here for a reason. God only let us come here because he know we can handle it. So let's handle it, and let's rise above it, and let's rule again. Rule righteously. What's up, my nigga? With the term of the demon that he gave, I paused and looked around like, talking to me, because to me, a nigga is a modern day slave. See, niggas is living in America with one foot in the devil's grave, but because you get it paid, nigga, you think you got it made, nigga, you think you got power because you can pull a trigger, nigga, and kill your brothers and sisters, nigga, because you are irate and you can show and prove that you hate a nigga. My father used to say the black man is a coward, because he want to act like a man, while real men are handling the affairs of the world. Real men are trading diamonds, copper, gold, oil, steel, and uranium. Real men are thinking long range and manipulating interest rates in the stock exchange, while niggas is playing games. Niggas is playing games like, who shot ya? Niggas is playing games like, who's darker? And who look like Beyonce? And who look like Miss Parker? Who got the baddest prefabricated MTV crib? Who got the baddest ass, girl? What you mean? You should be playing hopscotch, girl. You only 13. And who's pimping A-Ride? Nigga, do you know what pimp means? Nigga, you being pimped by the establishment as a political machine. Niggas are being pimped by immigrant merchants in our hoods. We got Arabs selling us swine, blunts, and cancer sticks. Koreans selling us hip-hop clothes. And international niggas selling us what we put up in our nose. Parasites. You ask them, yo, why you buy from Parasites? They be like, shh, it's all good, dog. It's all gravy. Niggas is being pimped by the Army, Air Force, Marines, and Navy. Niggas are being pimped by the prison industrial complex. And you think niggas pimping just got to do with money, cash, hoes, and sex. Niggas need to study lessons that Elijah, Malcolm Lewis, Clarence and them gave. And maybe niggas will realize that a nigga is a modern day slave. Nigga.
This is APNS Public Radio.
Palestine is one of the most reported places in the world.
But there's still a lot of misinformation about the reality on the ground.
What much of the media fails to explain
is that since 1948, nearly 75% of the entire indigenous Palestinian population
have been forcibly driven off our land.
to make room for the creation of the so-called State of Israel.
And we are denied the right to return to our homeland.
The remaining 25% of Palestinians live as second-class citizens in the State of Israel, or under a brutal military occupation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
While world powers fund and support Israel, we,
the people of the world, in our millions,
support the Palestinian people's struggle for freedom and equal rights.
If I boycott Israeli goods,
it's because I oppose an illegal occupation.
Because I oppose racism. Because I oppose brutality towards the indigenous people of their land. I reject the notion that I am anti-Semitic.
I reject the notion I'm a self-hating Jew, simply because I oppose the idea of an exclusively Jewish state.
There is only one line of division.
It's not a line of division between Muslims and Jews.
It's not a line of division between Palestinians and Israelis.
It is a line of division.
It is a line of division.
It is a line of division between those who stand for the equality of all
and those who stand for the supremacy of some. Boycott apartheid.
Boycott Israel.
Boycott apartheid.
Boycott Israel.
Boycott apartheid. Boycott Israel.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news act.
Que